Just excuse me. Just recognize a couple of my co-authors who are in the room, Dr. Ellen Daly over on this side of the room and Alyssa Mayer who is over on this side of the room. That first sentence there is certainly going to be a shocker for everybody. But sexual activity is a major part of college life. Write that down. But we certainly see the tangible evidence of this in Patrick's study. The percentage of college students entering college as freshmen who had never had sex dropped from 49% to 28% in less than a full college year. In Sinovitz's study, you can see that there was a gradual increase in the number of a percentage of students who were sexually active as they progressed from freshman through senior year. And perhaps of more significant interest is that for 50% of college women, their first sexual intercourse is unplanned, and for a fairly large percentage, significant percentage of them, that intercourse takes place under the influence of alcohol. College women between the ages of 20 and 24 do have one of the highest rates of unintended pregnancies, largely because of inadequate contraceptive use or participation in unsafe sexual practices. And if you, in referring back to the previous slide, more than 80% of college women are sexually active, but certainly most of those are not seeking to become pregnant. Approximately 12% of college students report either experiencing or being involved in an unplanned pregnancy, and a much greater percent, 52%, have at least gone through a pregnancy scare. So preventing unintended pregnancy is an important health objective for college students, partially met by encouraging the use of acceptable and effective contraceptive methods. However, existing or prior attitudes and beliefs about contraception may influence the acceptance or rejection of a particular method. So this particular study is actually a continuation of studies that we began in 1985 and have done at five-year intervals since 1985, basically asking the question, how does prior experience with a contraceptive option influence certain attributes that are assigned to a given method? So we examined the attitudes of university undergraduate students toward 12 contraceptive options, generating what Key and Derek in their 1981 paper described as acceptability scores. And secondly, we assess whether these scores differed by sex and contraception use history, where contraception use history is dichotomized as ever use or never use of a particular method. To look at attitudes, we used semantic differential scales. Semantic differential scales were first described in the 1950s by Osgood and colleagues, and have been used to study attitudes and the emotional impact of various constructs and words. As everybody knows, words and terms have dictionary messages, but or dictionary definitions, but they also can have create more visceral kinds of responses or connotative representational meanings. As I also said before, previous experience and sets of beliefs may help shape some of these representational meanings, and as a result, different people may assign contrasting connotative meanings to the same term. Semantic differential scales are often scored on a 7-point scale from -3 to +3 with bipolar adjective endpoints such as good, bad, difficult, easy, hot, cold, and so on. A series of these scales can be summed to yield an overall score for a given construct, enabling us to look at some of the subtle aspects that comprise people's attitude. Another good thing about semantic differential scales is that they're fairly easy to use. They're economical to use in studying people's attitudes. They can be used with a wide variety of populations, from relatively young children to older adults. And a number of studies have shown that semantic differential scales translate fairly well across language and culture. So anyway, back to our study. 12 contraceptive methods were rated by 792 college undergraduates from two large universities in the southeastern United States, each method being evaluated against 40 semantic differential scales. Retest correlations for the adjective pairs range from fairly modest 0.48 to 0.93, but relatively consistent with the kinds of correlations that we have found in previous studies and Key and Derek found in their original study in 1981. And we did use the 7-point scale of -3 to +3, where -3 was the negative aspect of the bipolar scale and +3 was the more favorable aspect. The 12 methods that we examined included abstinence, the contraceptive patch, diaphragm, douche, emergency contraception, female condom, female sterilization, male condom, male sterilization, the Nuva ring, oral contraceptive, and withdrawal. And these particular methods were chosen because in a separate pilot study of college students, these, when asked to identify contraceptive methods, these are the ones that were most frequently identified. So not an exhaustive list, but certainly the ones most frequently identified. For each contraceptive method, survey participants were asked to respond to the item, I or a partner have used this contraception method in my lifetime, with possible answers of yes, no, and unsure. Data were collected in classroom settings, relatively small group settings of 21 to 40 students. They were provided with written directions, which were also read aloud to them. Had up to 50 minutes to complete the instrument. They were not asked for any specific identifying information. These were paper and pencil surveys. They were not on bubble sheets. And just 29 surveys were returned completely blank, enabling us to analyze 792 usable surveys. And the project was approved by separate reviews at the IRBs of the two participating schools. Scores for the adjective pairs were summed for each contraceptive method, and the means of the sum scores, or as Key and Derek refer to as the acceptability scores, for each method were compared using t-tests for ever users and never users of a particular method. We did do separate analyses for men and women, and for respondents who said they were unsure if they had ever used a particular contraceptive option with a partner, very few in that category, but those were eliminated from the analysis. Criterion for statistical significance was 0.05, and where appropriate, effect sizes were calculated. Kind of looks like the sample in the last study that was reported, a mean age of a little more than 19. Largely women, I think it was 71% in the last study, 69% in this one. Predominantly white, 13.6% reporting Hispanic or Latino ethnicity. Predominantly Christian, 93% identified themselves as exclusively heterosexual. This was mostly an unmarried or a never married population comprised of US citizens for the most part and reporting English as a primary language. All the contraceptive methods assessed in this study were familiar to the vast majority of participants. The fewest students had heard of the douche and the Nuva ring as contraception options. And the most familiar methods were the male condom and oral contraceptive, which you can see almost universal knowledge of both of these. In terms of ever use, abstinence actually was the method that was most frequently reported, followed by male condom and oral contraceptive. And as you can see, only a small fraction of the overall sample was unsure whether they had ever used these particular methods. Perhaps of greater note here is in terms of acceptability scores, those that I have highlighted here for women and men show where there were significant differences between ever users and never users. And the acceptability score sort of leading the pack here for women, but very close, the NuvaRing, oral contraceptive, and abstinence. For men, the greatest acceptability score was for the NuvaRing followed by the oral contraceptive. So these differences represent, for men, ever users versus never users, and likewise over on this side for women. So what can we conclude from this? Most contraceptive options certainly are familiar to college students and almost across the board are given favorable ratings by both sexes, really regardless of ever user or never user status. However, we do have some things worthy to note. For women, being an ever user was associated with a significantly more positive acceptability score for 6 out of the 10 methods for which there was a user history. For one method, the male condom had comparable acceptability scores regardless of previous history of use. Possibly, and this is just sort of speculation, women view the male condom as a viable and user-friendly method regardless of previous experience because the contraceptive burden is not exclusively on them. Ever user and never user evaluations of the NuvaRing and the contraceptive patch by women were significantly different between users or ever users and never users, perhaps because it represents a technological improvement, and both methods are fairly inconspicuous and non-disruptive during sexual intercourse. Abstinence was one of the most highly rated methods among women who reported its ever use for contraception. And although we can't rule out social desirability response bias, the high rating given to abstinence may suggest, you know, some emerging desire to delay or limit sexual intercourse, or suggest that perceived risk of becoming pregnant or acquiring an STI is more important than in some of the previous cohorts that we've looked at. And whereas these women may perceive themselves at risk for pregnancy, they also may fear certain STIs because of some of the long-term consequences, persistent infection or infertility, and perhaps in some cases life-threatening conditions such as cervical cancer. But I think there's some things to that at least public health authorities ought to be glad about, and that is that some of the messages, regardless of previous user history about condoms, for instance, seem to have had some uptake. For men, there was a significant difference in acceptability scores for 5 of the 7 methods. Interesting, but perhaps not surprising, is that the 3 highest acceptability scores all involve methods for which the burden of contraception is placed primarily on the woman. For men, the male condom received a significantly more favorable evaluation from ever users than from never users. So it may be the case that, in terms of improving acceptability or acceptance, our task is really to get men to, in particular, to use a condom the first time, and it seems to be something that improves or increases acceptability. All right, sort of, I've got two slides left, I think. When we look at the favorable rating the male condom received from women, at least two observations can be met, and I've sort of hinted at this. Promotional messages about the benefits of the male condom have had some uptake in this audience, and other than abstinence, it was the method most likely to have been used by students and appears to be a more acceptable option than what we discovered in a study we did a little more than two decades ago. So as the last study concluded, the overall acceptability scores suggest that pro-condom methods, messages should continue to be a priority for dissemination to college students because condoms, STI protection, as well as their contraceptive properties are important. We've built on some of our previous studies. I can talk a little bit about those in the question and answer period. But as the previous study also concluded, we do need to do ongoing research to continue monitoring. So I guess we will have time for questions later on.